The following is a Sunday feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 15, text number 5, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on December 9th, 2012, at Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Temple, Bonakwale, Mauritius.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nirmama mohajita sanga dosha ajatmanitya vinivritta kama dandvai vimuktai sukaduka sangayar gachanchamudha padamavyayam tat. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender under the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The surrendering process is described here very nicely. The first qualification is that one should not be eluded by pride, because the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking himself the lord of material nature. It is very difficult for him to surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should know by the cultivation of real knowledge that he is not lord of material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord. When one is free from delusion caused by pride, he can begin the process of surrender. For one who is always expecting some honor in this material world, it is not possible to surrender under the Supreme Person. Pride is due to illusion, for although one comes here, stays here for a brief time, and then goes away, he has the foolish notion that he is the Lord of the world. He thus makes all things complicated, and he is always in trouble. The whole world moves under this impression. People are considering this land, this earth, to belong to human society, and they have divided the land under the false impression that they are the proprietors. One has to get out of this false notion that human society is the proprietor of this world. When one is freed from such a false notion, he becomes free from all the false associations caused by familial, social and national affections. These faulty associations bind one to this material world. After this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. One has to cultivate knowledge of what is actually his own and what is actually not his own. And when one has an understanding of things as they are, he becomes free from all dual conceptions, such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain. He becomes full of knowledge. Then it is possible for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatha Parakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Zagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivashakanditamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashchatyadeshatarine. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for giving us another most enlightening Bhaktivedanta purport to help us understand what is this ultimate science, Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada very intelligently, in a very enlightened way, he tells us what our problem is here. We think we're the Lord. You may say, what? No, it's a friend. We see it, even a little child. The kids from next door come over to play, and they see the boy's toys, and they want to play with the boy's toys. He says, mine. Is he? Even a little child, he thinks he's the Lord. These are my toys. You cannot play unless I say so, because I am the Lord of these toys. Have we gotten over it? No. We're still doing the same thing. I am the Lord. My family is the best. I love my family, but the neighbors I don't like. I love my nation, but those other nations over there are no good. It's the same mentality, the lording it over mentality. That is not our rightful position. Do you understand? That is not our rightful position. Because we come naked and we go naked. We come with nothing and we leave with nothing. But we're so foolish, in the middle we claim, this is mine. And we fight. Therefore the Vedic teaching is nirmama, nothing is mine. So I guarantee you, if you want peace of mind, you must embrace this philosophy, nirmama philosophy, that nothing is mine. I don't possess anything. Why? Krishna says clearly in Bhagavad Gita, sarva loka maheshwaram, I am the owner of absolutely everything. So Krishna is the owner, not you. Is that your body? No. You cannot even claim your body is yours. Bhumirapo nalavayur kangmano badare vacha ahankara iti yame banaparkitirashtadha. Krishna says, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all together these constitute my separated energies. Thank you very much. That means even your mind you cannot claim to be owner of. Even the mind is the property of Krishna. So what are the proprietors? What is the one thing that we are proprietors of? The false conception that I am the owner. That's the one thing we rightfully own. The false conception that I'm the owner. That position we should give them. Now the Mayavadis, they think, yes, now we have become Brahman, realized. I renounce this world. I'm very renounced. I am Brahmanandi, Mayavadi. They don't say Mayavadi, but that's our word. I renounce the world, therefore I am liberated. But that is another type of illusion. If you come into the bank with a gun to rob the bank, you're a criminal. You're a rascal. You can't rob the bank. It's somebody else's money. You cannot come and rob them. And if you come into the bank and you say, I renounce this bank, you're a madman. It's not your money. How you can renounce it? So the Mayavadi is very proudly saying, I renounce this world. How can he renounce it? It wasn't his to begin with. That's another false conception. So whether I think I'm the owner, I say I renounce this world, they are both false conceptions. The proper conception is to see everything as the property of Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. That is the proper conception. That is actual spiritual enlightenment. When you see everything as the property of Krishna and you engage everything in the service of Krishna, then you're a liberated soul of Jivan Mukta. Even in this material world, you see. One who engages his body, mind, and words in Krishna's service is a liberated soul even in all conditions of material existence, as stated in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. So you don't have to become a sannyasi to become liberated. Was Arjuna a sannyasi? Huh? Was he a sannyasi? No, he was not a sannyasi. Arjuna is the perfect example of the person who fully realized and implemented the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. He was a married man, professional man, but he became the greatest self-realized soul simply by engaging his occupational duty in the service of Krishna. So how do you do that? It's not difficult. Don't claim proprietorship, that's all. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. He said, I'm working to maintain Krishna's household, not mine. He was an employee of the British government, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But he was Jivan Mukta, a fully liberated soul beyond this material existence. Externally, he went to work on Monday morning. But he's a liberated soul. So you can become liberated soul. We all become liberated soul. We will simply remember these points, you see. Don't claim proprietorship. It's not my house. It's not my money. It's not my wife. It's not my husband. It's not my kids. It's not my parents, my brothers, my sisters, my car, my neighborhood, my country. All of it is the property of Krishna. And if you simply, therefore, if it's his property, then who should it be used for? For me? No. If it's Krishna's property, whose enjoyment should it be used for? For Krishna's enjoyment. It's Krishna. When I get my paycheck from my job, is that my money? My hard-earned money? No. That's Krishna's money. A little secret, if you think it's your earned money, it will always be hard-earned money. If you think it's Krishna's money, it will be easy-earned money. So do you want to earn money the easy way or the hard way?
Easy way.
Everyone must want easy money. If you will see it all as a property of Krishna, money will come to you easily, actually. You see it as your property, it will be very hard to get money. A little secret, inside secret of economics. See it as Krishna's money, and money will come to you very easily. You see, because money is Lakshmi. She is a pure devotee of Lord Narayan, who is Krishna's expansion, you see. So if you want money, then give yourself completely to Narayan, to Krishna. And then money will come to you very easily, with no problem. Krishna is not a poor man. He can give you millions and billions of dollars immediately. Immediately he can give. What will you do with it? Will you use it for sense enjoyment? Or will you use it for devotional service? I don't know about here, but in America, the system when I grew up was the parents gave the children an allowance. I'm not saying it's a good policy, but that's when I grew up, that was the system in America. I used to get 5 cents a week. That was my allowance. One big nickel. Wow, a big nickel every week, you see. So the father, he sees the son is spending his allowance very wisely. He's saving it up for his college education in his piggy bank. The father will double your allowance. My dear son, I'm very happy to see that you're saving your allowance for your college education. I will give you double allowance. The other son, oh, you're just spending it on bubble gum. Therefore, you stay at 5 cents a week. Is he? So in the same way, how have you utilized money? That is being seen by Krishna. If you spend it on sense gratification, okay, keep your 5 cents a week allowance. Using it in my service to spread the Krishna Ganges movement all over the world, oh, here, double, triple, quadruple. You see? So in this way, it's very practical. Our philosophy is very practical. It's not some dry philosophy. It's a very, very practical philosophy. If you will apply this Vaishnava philosophy in your life, you'll be living with Krishna at every minute. Do you know that? You'll be living with Krishna. Those who embody Vaishnava philosophy in their every thought, their every word, their every deed, who truly practice bhakti, not just on the lips, but within the heart, who practice bhakti, they associate directly with Lord Sri Krishna at every minute. We pray to come to that level. But that's a fact. So we have to train ourselves up to come to that level of pure bhakti. And Prabhupada is giving us the points. Prabhupada is teaching us how to come to the point where we can associate directly with Krishna at every minute. The first step is don't think that you're the Lord. That's the first thing we have to do. We have to stop thinking that we're the Lord. Because as long as I'm the Lord, then Krishna can't have any true relationship with me, because I'm denying his position. You have to take Krishna on his terms, not your terms. They want to take God as the order supplier. Yes, my dear Lord, you're very great. Now give me this, give me this, give me, give me, give me, give me. Give me a Cadillac, a brand new Cadillac, replete with Michelin tires. Give my wife a new silk sari. Give my kids a Harvard education. Give me a house by the sea. Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari. You see? They're approaching God. Actually, one gentleman in Malaysia, he complained because he would sing that song every night for his children and sing them to sleep. He was thinking it's a very nice song of bhakti. But I pointed out to him how the prayer was actually a fruitive prayer. And he realized. And now he switched to chanting Hare Krishna. You see, they have some nice sentiment, but it's always mixed with give me, give me, give me. You see, that's not pure bhakti. You may get your house by the sea. Of course, that's not so difficult here. We have in this country. But you won't get Krishna. You won't get Krishna. And if you don't have Krishna, your life is wasted. Do you realize how many lifetimes you've gone through to get to this human birth? How many millions of times you've gone through the cycles of birth, death, old age, and disease? As a dog, an elephant, a raccoon, a baboon, a coconut palm, a mango tree, a lychee fruit tree. All the different births you went through to finally get this human life, and now you're going to use it for sense gratification? That's a crazy, insane thing. You've got this human life, therefore, tato brahma jigyasa. Now you've got the human life, Vedanta Sutta says, utilize it to understand who you are. What is the purpose of your existence? To understand what is the absolute truth. That is intelligence. That is human life. If you don't use this human life to understand what is the absolute truth, my dear ladies and gentlemen, then you have simply thrown your life down the drain, that's all. You've simply spoiled your human life. You spoiled it. Drinking poison knowingly, Narottam Das Thakur said. So don't spoil this human life. Simply going after sense enjoyment. Utilize your human life to re-establish your relationship with Krishna as His eternal servant. So, another point that Prabhupada makes. It's pride, you see. Actually, pride is simply a symptom of one who thinks he's the Lord. So one who always wants to be honored, you see. That's a problem. Even in Krishna consciousness, that's a problem sometimes. I want to be recognized as a great devotee, you see. I want people to honor me as a great devotee, you see. That's a problem. Prabhupada therefore explains that one of the symptoms of a Vaishnava is he is silent. That's actually the 26th quality, is silent. And that silent means silent worker. He doesn't require to be honored for his service. His happiness is simply to do what pleases Krishna. He doesn't have to be recognized by the Vaishnavas. Of course, we recognize. It's our duty to recognize the Vaishnavas. From our side, we should recognize every service that every devotee does. We should recognize every devotee. But for ourselves, we shouldn't be demanding honor and recognition for our service. You see? Because that's not the mood of bhakti. The mood of bhakti is to give without expecting anything in return. So the more we can be in that mood of completely selflessly giving without expecting anything in return, to that extent we achieve the supreme return, which is Krishna Himself. So are there any questions? It's easy. Some papers were passed out. It's good to write the questions. I'm somewhat deaf, so I usually can't hear what somebody asks a question. I can't understand what you're saying. So the paper is a very good way to pass the papers for them. Plus, you can be anonymous also. When you can ask questions anonymously. No one knows who asked the question. Sometimes I get some very controversial questions by doing this that no one would dare ask if they knew who, if there was known who was asking the question. If the philosophy is so easy, why is it difficult to practice? It's interesting, this question, a similar question was asked of Srila Prabhupada when I was with him during the famous Bhagavad Dharma discourses in New Vrindavan in 1972. One hippie boy from Gainesville, Florida said, "Prabhupada, if our purpose is to go back to Godhead, why is Maya so strong?" And we were all interested to see, Prabhupada of course is expert at handling every question. We were interested to see how Prabhupada will handle this one. Prabhupada would just immediately answer the most profound answers. So Prabhupada said, "Because your purpose is not strong." So in the same way, the philosophy is so easy, why is it difficult to practice? Because you're making it difficult. It's not difficult, but you are making it difficult. That is the difficulty. Don't make it difficult by speculating. I think this, I think that. Just simply take it. It is given by Krishna. It is given by Prabhupada without any doubts. And it's very simple. Is it difficult to subdue sense gratification? No, it isn't. You just have to get the higher taste. Do you know how much nectar there is in the two syllables Krishna? Have any of you ever measured how much nectar there is in the two syllables Krishna? If any of you find some kind of a meter or scale which can actually determine how much nectar there is in the two syllables Krishna, well, Rupa Goswami couldn't fathom it. There's so much nectar in Krishna. So, it's difficult to subdue sense gratification if you are not chanting sufficiently. If you are finding difficulty in subdue sense gratification, chant more and be more attentive and chant in the early morning. And I guarantee you, you will get a wonderful flavor, a wonderful taste, and it'll become very easy because the name Krishna contains more nectar than anything you could conceive of. What is your most, your wildest dream of sense enjoyment in this material world? A beautiful woman, a handsome looking guy, $1 million, you know, what's your greatest fantasy of enjoyment in the material world? Marilyn Monroe, you know. What's your greatest, some beautiful naked woman, you know. What's your greatest fantasy? Well, it's all nothing compared to Krishna's name. It's all nothing. Krishna, there's more nectar in Krishna's name than even the most beautiful heavenly damsel from the Svargalok. So there's nothing in the material world that can compete. If you have this conviction, then you can easily give up sense gratification. Okay. In respect that everything belongs to Krishna, my body, my mind, is the five atma, the true self, also belongs to Krishna. Of course. I am Krishna's property. I am the eternal spirit soul. I'm also the property of Krishna. Everything, because Krishna is the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarva pravartate. Everything is his property. I am the energy of Krishna. I am Krishna's property. Of course. Everything belongs to the Lord, then how do we maintain relationships with wife, children, etc.? By seeing them all as the property of the Lord, engaging them all in the Lord's service. Then you're the best husband, the best wife, best father, the best son, etc. There is many instructions in Krishna consciousness, but what according to you is the ultimate instruction? Prabhupada told us in Atlanta. One book distributor came back with his van full of brahmacharis, all fired up. He said, "Prabhupada, what pleases you the most?" Prabhupada said, "If you love Krishna." So that's the ultimate instruction. Love Krishna is the ultimate instruction. I mean, look how beautiful he is. I mean, you ever seen anybody more good-looking than Krishna? He's the most lovable, beautiful, amazing person you could ever hope to meet. Just love Krishna. That's the ultimate instruction. If you love Krishna, you will give your life to Krishna. That's true love. If I truly love you, I will give my whole life to you. That is love, you see. What are the benefits of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? Well, what can I say? There are unlimited benefits. The ultimate benefit is Krishna becomes your personal property. That's the ultimate benefit. In the Uddhava Gita, it has been said, neither austerity, charity, visiting the temple, or japa will give liberation. What do you have to say? The only thing that is actually, only by love of Krishna can you become liberated. Nothing, there's no mechanical thing. That love is the packed love in practice is surrender. You see. To actually live a life of love means full surrender. So that's the only thing that will liberate you. If you do austerities, charities, visit the temple of japa, and you don't surrender to Krishna, then you're not going to get liberated. In the book Beyond Birth and Death, it is said that those who show their body to the opposite sex and receive the body of a tree. What happened to a Brahma? When doing an art show. Art show with his body? To a Brahmachari. What happened to a Brahmachari when he did doing an art show? With an arti. Arti. Doing arti. Snow. Arti snow. I don't understand this question. Is it an offense to read Krishna's books in bed? None. Well, depends on what you do with the book. I mean, if you drool on it or something like that, that would be an offense. But actually, to lay there and I wouldn't put it on, I wouldn't, you know, place it in the bedding. You have a nice book stand. If you can read yourself to sleep, very respectfully, take the book, read it, and you get until you get a little tired, and you can lay it there. I wouldn't keep it in the bed with you. That's not the bed. Is the bed sheets are mushy. But to read in bed, there's nothing wrong. But I wouldn't keep the book in the bed. Lay it by the bed on a nice clean table. Some of the Mauritian devotees are getting carried away by a movement called Bhakti Prabhupada. It's difficult to bring them back to ISKCON and Prabhupada. What to do? Yeah, this Bhakti Prabhupada movement is bogus movement. Actually, the whole thing was started one devotee named Nityananda in the U.S. He was very envious of the leadership of ISKCON. So he paid two devotees who were very expert in research in the Shastra to come up with some philosophy to defeat the idea that Prabhupada's disciples could be spiritual masters. That Prabhupada, he paid them to come up with something that would break the guru system of ISKCON. He paid them money to do it. They were on his payroll, they were being maintained by him. He said, either do this or I'm cutting off your money. So if you want to keep getting paid, you have to do this. So they really worked really hard and they looked for some way of word jugglery and came up with this idea of this Ritvik philosophy. It was actually Rupa Vilas Prabhu, who later on said it was, he renounced the philosophy, but he was paid to come up with the Ritvik philosophy by Nityananda. He was very envious. This is the same devotee who said that Prabhupada is poison. He paid these devotees to come up with the Ritvik philosophy. So the Ritvik philosophy is actually a twisting of what Prabhupada instructed. Here's the situation. In May of 1977, Prabhupada clearly stated that the devotees asked him, the GBC approached him, well, how will the things go on after you're gone? after you depart, how will initiations go on? He said the new devotees will become the disciples of my disciples. He clearly stated them. He said they will be my grand disciples. In other words, I will be the grandfather spiritual master. Prabhupada clearly said them. Now, at the time, Prabhupada was still accepting disciples, but he was getting very sick. And it was hard to deal with that. And you're sick in bed. So in July of 1977, he said, okay, these 11, I'm naming 11 devotees who can handle all the functions of the initiation. They will decide who's a fit candidate, they'll chant on the beads, they'll give the name, and they'll go and they'll perform the yajna, and he'll be initiated as my disciple. And Tamal said, are these Ritviks? And Prabhupada said, yes. They're acting as representatives of the spiritual master. So that system was going on from July, starting in July of 1977. That Prabhupada was still accepting, he was still on the planet accepting disciples, but he was so sick he couldn't deal with any of the aspects of it. He was laying in bed and he had these 11 men handle all the aspects. See who's qualified, chant on his beads, give him the name, perform the yajna, and now you're Prabhupada's disciple. But then, on October 18th, 1977, Prabhupada, still in a very, now in an even more sick condition, he said, I will, from now on, I will not initiate any more disciples. And he instructed one of his disciples that now you initiate this person as your disciple. So there was a Ritvik system of these 11 men doing all the functions of initiation for making people Prabhupada's disciples when Prabhupada was on the planet. But Prabhupada ended that system on October 18th, at which time the instructions he gave in May 1977 went into full effect. That from October 18th forward, anyone who came forward for initiation, they become the disciple of Prabhupada's disciple. This was Prabhupada's instruction. So these back to Prabhupada people, they're envious people because they didn't get to be spiritual masters under Prabhupada's orders. They wanted to be guru, but they weren't allowed to be guru. So they followed the philosophy known as sour grapes. You see? You heard the story of the fox? There were some grapes, and they looked really good. Those grapes look good. He kept jumping for those grapes. He couldn't reach them. He said, oh, they're sour. You see? So these Ritvik people, they wanted to be guru, but they weren't able to qualify according to Prabhupada's system. So they said, oh, nobody can become guru. Because I can't become guru, nobody can become guru. This is called the Ritviks, you see. They also wanted to be gurus, but they weren't qualified because they weren't surrendered to Prabhupada. They were envious people. So they said, oh, nobody can be, because if I can't be a guru, nobody can be a guru. Only Prabhupada is a guru and nobody else, you see. But actually, they're not accepting Prabhupada as guru. Because Prabhupada said, after my departure, the new devotees will become the disciples of my disciples. They don't accept that instruction of Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, they are not followers of Srila Prabhupada. Their magazine, Back to Prabhupada, is not Back to Prabhupada. It's Back to Maya magazine. They should rename their magazine Back to Maya. Actually, their magazine, if you've ever seen it, I don't recommend you go look for one. If you ever happen to see one, it is simply Vaishnava Aparad, page after page after page. They take every ISKCON guru and they blaspheme him from one end to the other. I've appeared there a couple of times. They had their fun with me too. In their magazine, they said that I was very much in anxiety that my disciples did not bring me a Rolls Royce car. Now I can ask my disciple here, Pallad, have I ever complained you didn't bring me a Rolls Royce car? I've never complained. I'm very comfortable in his Toyota, you see. They say that I'm disturbed that I'm not being driven in a Rolls. This is complete nonsense. That I'm not being driven in a Rolls Royce car. They concoct all these things. They blaspheme me that I'm disturbed. I'm not riding in a Rolls Royce. This is the kind of things that are in their magazine. Complete concocted nonsense. And they call it Back to Prabhupada magazine. So avoid it. It's poison. Actually, I had one disciple, he's now deceased. He had no experience with ISKCON or any of the things going on. The first, very first time he was associating with me in my e-course, he was a former Catholic priest. He wanted to become a Hare Krishna devotee. And I was training him through correspondence on the internet. And first time he came to the temple was in Los Angeles. And there was a kirtan. He was in absolute bliss. He was ecstasy in the kirtan in the temple room. And he went back to his backpack and he found this magazine. He got home, he opened it up. It was Back to Prabhupada magazine. He didn't know anything about ISKCON or Back to Prabhupada. He knew nothing of this. As soon as he read this, he said, "This is poison," and he burned it immediately. And he said, "I'm not going back to that temple again." I had to tell him that wasn't us, that was some spies in the temple. You can come to the temple again. That wasn't us, that was some spies sneaking around. So he said, "Okay." So if you ever get it back to Prabhupada magazine, it's poison. You can immediately burn it. Put it in the shredder. Or if you're interested to see how poisonous they are, you can read it, but be very careful. You can see that it's poison. Yes.
What about those people who have not met Prabhupada's movement, that at the very beginning they got connected?
It's a great shame that somebody becomes, first of all, connected with those people, because I have that experience. They are trained to be blasphemous against ISKCON from the very day one. They train them to be blasphemous against ISKCON. They poison them from the very beginning. It's a very, very bad thing they're doing. It's better they just go off and become Christians or something like that if they don't want to be surrendered to ISKCON.
I met one of them.
Huh?
I met one of them.
Yeah.
And he gave me a bundle of literature. And it's still, I never read them.
Yeah.
He kept on phoning me, "Have you read this? Have you read this? Have you read this?"
In the history of Vaishnavism, this is nothing, there's nothing new. There's always deviant sects. After the disappearance of the Lord Chaitanya and his associates, so many devious sects, also Vaishnava sects, also appeared in Bengal. So it's nothing new. Any successful movement will have devious split-off sects. It's just part of the sociological reality of religious movements in history. So we shouldn't be discouraged by it. We should just deal with it intelligently. And, you know, let the dogs bark, but the caravan will pass. What are the offenses we cannot commit while chanting japa? They are listed in the Nectar Devotion. I don't have time to give the whole detail. That's a whole lecture in itself, the 10 offenses lecture. But please look that up in the Nectar Devotion. There are 10 offenses to be avoided while chanting. Why is it at the times I get the taste to chant the Maha Mantra and at times I don't feel like chanting? That's because you're a neophyte, Prabhu. A neophyte devotee goes through cycles of up and down. But as you become gradually, you remain steady through all the ups and down cycles, gradually you become very fixed. You'll get a steady taste for the name. That will gradually come, but it takes time. You have to work at it. It takes years of practice to become super steady in your chanting, where you get a constant taste every time you chant. But it's worth it, believe me. It's worth it. All the struggle you go through, all those days when you didn't want to chant, you did it anyway, it all pays off. Because I'll give you a hint. When you don't want to chant and you chant anyway, that's when you make more advancement. I don't feel like chanting, but I'm going to do it because Prabhupada wants me to do it. My spiritual master wants me to do it. The devotees want me to do it. Therefore, I'm going to do it. Even though I don't feel like it, that's when you make more advancement. So capitalize on those days when you don't feel like chanting. Because those are the days you'll make more progress on the pathway back to Godhead. Okay, this is the last one. Any more questions? If not, this will be the last question. Anything else, Prahlad? Okay. Okay, engaging ourselves in devotional service for liberation, is it not conditional love? Well, yes and no, because love is not conditional. There's no such thing as conditional love. That's not love, that's business. If I put a condition, it's business deal, it's not love. Love must be unconditional. So if I leave off the word love here, I say, is engaging ourselves in devotional service or liberation, is it not conditional? Yes, it is conditional. That my dear Lord Krishna, if you will liberate me from the cycle of birth and death, then I'll serve you. That's again a business deal, a condition. A devotee's mood is, my dear Lord, whatever you want to do with me is okay, you see. You can handle me roughly by your embrace. You can leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You are my worshipful Lord unconditionally. If you want me to keep me in the cycle of birth and death perpetually, I don't care. As long as I never forget you, that's all my only prayer, my Lord. Please bless me. I will never forget that I am your devotee. And I add, I will never forget that I'm Prabhupada's disciple. You see? I always add that one. That's a bona fide. You can always, that's a bona fide desire too. I can always remember that I'm the disciple of my spiritual master. So, that's my meditation, you see. That Krishna, whatever you like, I'm simply, if you want me to take birth again, I don't mind. But just let me not forget that I'm your devotee, I'm Prabhupada's disciple. That's my only desire. As far as I'm concerned, my Lord, to be engaged in your service is as good as being in Goloka Vrindavan. And actually here, how we can say this is not as good as Goloka Vrindavan? This is as good as Goloka Vrindavan. Were you seeing Krishna Balaram? Who can say this is not as good as Goloka Vrindavan? This reminds me about something. I was just recently in Vrindavan. I had met an amazing purport by Srila Prabhupada. He explains how there's people who are wandering, even today, are wandering in Vrindavan with an intense desire to see Krishna. And Prabhupada explains that even though they're not seeing Krishna, their intense desire to see Krishna is as good as seeing Krishna. He said, this cannot be explained. How this is so cannot be explained. It cannot be explained, but it can be realized, you see. So actually, if one intensely desires to be with Krishna, his eternal pastimes, that intense desire is as good as already being there. So who needs to go back to Godhead? If you have that intense desire simply to always be with Krishna and associate with him and his transcendental pastimes, you're as good as already there. So Krishna, whatever you want to do with me, that's him. Whatever you want to do with me. That is the mood. But you know what? That's the mood that will take you immediately back to Godhead. Then have no conditions. My dear Lord, simply whatever you want to do with me, I'm totally surrendered to you. That is that mood of not making any condition on my devotional service. That is the mood which will immediately transport you to the spiritual world. So the qualification for going back to Godhead is to not make that a condition of your service. Is it? So Krishna will never neglect those who have fully dedicated themselves to him. He will never neglect them. He will never, ever, ever neglect those who have fully given themselves heart, soul, mind, everything in Krishna's service. He will never neglect them. They have their place in Krishna's pastimes, waiting for them. So, yes?
We need the mercy of the Guru to go back to Godhead.
What's he saying?
We need the mercy of Guru to go back to Godhead.
Do we need?
We need.
You're asking a question?
The Guru to go back.
Do you say, do we need?
No. We need.
You're making a comment. Oh, okay. If the guru falls down, Prabhupada explains in his purport in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam that if the disciple, he says, if the spiritual, he personally, in a very humble way, he said, I'm feeling myself in my old age to be very crippled. He is saying, if my disciple becomes very strong, my disciple can carry me back to Guru. And very humble. So that should be the mood. Because just consider, let's say somebody made you a devotee, and he inspired you greatly to surrender. And let's say he fell down. Then what should I think? Well, he saved me. Let me see if I can save him. Or at least pray for him. There's nothing else I can do. If somebody actually saved me and made me a devotee and inspired me greatly to serve Prabhupada's mission, and he falls into difficulty, then I should be thinking, I should be praying for him, or if there's something I can do to help him, I should be trying to help him and to come back to Krishna consciousness. As Prabhupada gives that very example, that he says, I feel that I'm very crippled, that my disciple can carry me back to Godhead. So for somehow when Guru falls down, you should think of all the wonderful help he gave you. And you should think, what can I do to help him? And he's in difficulty. What can I do to help this person?
So how can you connect it to the person?
Huh? If the guru falls down, how is the disciple connected? As long as you follow the guru parampara system, we'll just look practically. We can, in our movement, we have Prabhupada's books, you see. Our spiritual masters train their disciples to follow Prabhupada's books. So, if you will strictly follow what's there in Srila Prabhupada's books, as you've been trained to do by your spiritual master and by all the other spiritual masters and the preachers, senior devotees, God brothers, etc., if you will stick carefully to following what's in Prabhupada's books, then you will be delivered. Prabhupada's books are the basis. I am a spiritual master. I have disciples all over the world, but I cannot say anything different from the books. I am simply here to help the books become more clear to my disciples, you see, and to all the other devotees. I am not some standalone authority. I am simply representing a tradition, the Vaishnava Sampradaya, you see. So if I fall down, my disciples should follow, should do what I told them to do all along. Read what's in Prabhupada's books and follow what's in Prabhupada's books. And then they'll be saved. Of course, I'm praying that that will never happen because I know it's very disturbing. Very, very disturbing. Actually, no, my understanding is if there's any question that someone falling down, they should never accept disciples to begin. Should never have, anyone who, there's some question, they to take the responsibility of disciple means you can never fall down. You're not allowed to fall down. To me, it's inconceivable. A spiritual master takes a disciple. The spiritual master is not allowed to fall down. Even if he wants to, he can't fall down. You're not allowed to fall down. It's against the rules. You can't do it. Even if he wants to, he just has to gut it out. He's not allowed to fall down. He shouldn't. It is a great sin if the spiritual master falls. It is a great, great sin if the spiritual master falls down. So unless one is convinced that I will, no matter what happens, I will never, ever, ever deviate from Prabhupada's teachings, he should never accept disciples to begin with. That's my realization. Only those devotees who are so convinced, I don't care what happens, I will never, ever, ever deviate from Prabhupada's instructions. I don't care what happens. In any condition, I will never, ever deviate. Only someone who has that staunch determination should be allowed to accept disciples. So if you're looking, one is looking for a guru, you should look for that guru, you see, who will never fall down from Krishna consciousness. That's the most important thing. Being a big name, that's not very... We have big name gurus fell down in our movement. Big famous gurus with so many thousands of disciples, they fell down, you see. That is not important. The important thing is how dedicated is this person to always remaining fixed in Krishna consciousness. That is the most important consideration for Guru, choosing a spiritual master. Where is that person who will never deviate from Krishna bhakti in any situation? That is the one I want as my spiritual master. Well, I know we're going quite a bit over time now. But I'm so happy. It's the first time I've come for the Sunday program here. I always came in the morning and it was like I couldn't see any. It was like 5 or 6 people here, you know. And I was always told, come back for the Sunday lecture. And I'm so happy we finally did. It's very nice. I'm so happy to see how all of you are coming here to Krishna Balaram, serving so nicely, cooking. So many devotees wearing saris and dhotis, tilak. It's very, very nice how you're cooperating here under our leadership. I'm so happy to see this. This is great. Prabhupada is he's here. Prabhupada is seeing you all. You know them? When they're serving nicely, Prabhupada is actually fully present in the murti. When the service is going on nicely, Prabhupada is fully present and he's seeing everything. So please take advantage of this wonderful association of Krishna Balaram and Srila Prabhupada and develop the pure love of Krishna in the Nahar. Be happy, make others happy. This is our happiness. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. And as a footnote, anybody who's interested, it was advertised in the Jamasni book, but I have my e-course. If anybody is interested, www.backtohome.com. You can sign up for my free e-course.